Albert Einstein's general theory of relativity turns 100 this year. This important milestone will be celebrated during the 2015 World Science Festival, which starts today and runs through the Sunday. There'll be over 50 events and performances in numerous locations across New York City, all designed to bring New Yorkers into contact with the world's leading scientists and the world's great scientific ideas. Joining us now are two men who'll be leading events at the festival: Brian Greene, a physicist, string theorist, professor at Columbia University, and a co-founder of the World Science Festival, and Alan Alda, actor and director and the founder of the Center for Communicating Science. I'm very pleased to welcome Brian and Alan back to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Albert Einstein is often thought of as the most famous scientist of the 20th century, and most people can identify his famous formula, E equals mc squared, but I suspect almost everyone other than scientists has a clue as to what it means and how it explains relativity.
Sure. Yeah, no, Einstein has really changed our way of looking at the world in so many ways. And the anniversary that we're now celebrating is for his discovery of general relativity,
which is different.
Yeah, that's his theory of gravity, how gravity works. Isaac Newton in the 1600s gave us some insight into gravity, but Einstein came along and kind of took a sledgehammer to it all and reworked our understanding.
Okay, so general relativity. We all understand that it's been proven to be true, but Alan, why haven't scientists communicated this important idea in a way that a layperson can understand?
I think scientists have to some amazing extent. When Einstein first came up with it, there were thought to be about three people in the world who actually understood it, and that was among some of the brightest people in the world.
And now it's five. We're up to five now.
Well, now, didn't your – maybe it wasn't you. Someone I know had a 10-year-old son who went to school one day dressed as Einstein in order to explain the general theory of relativity, and I think did a pretty good job. So if a 10-year-old can grasp the outlines of it, I think science has done not too bad a job.
But it was on the edge of science for a while, wasn't it? As I understand it, when Rutherford proved that it was true, Einstein wasn't informed.
The big experiment was actually Arthur Eddington in doing observations of distant stars during a solar eclipse. Yes, and you're absolutely right. For decades, relativity was kind of backwater of science, and it wasn't until the 60s and 70s that people really began to see how vital it was to our understanding, and it really took off from there.
The thing I love about Einstein's general theory of relativity is that as difficult as it is for us to grasp, without that, as I understand it, we would not carry around a GPS system in our pockets.
Yes,
and that
right.
We make use of Einstein's theory every moment of every day is amazing to me.
How does it apply to the GPS?
Well, when our iPhone is trying to, say, figure out where we are, it's actually in communication with satellites that are orbiting the Earth. And those satellites are determining where we are by fine measurements of time differences between signals. Now, those time differences require clocks. Einstein taught us that clocks tick off time differently based on the gravity that they are experiencing. So the clocks up there in the satellites are ticking off time a little bit more quickly. And if you did not take into account that fact when Einstein taught us, then the GPS system would be totally inaccurate.
But that basic idea, which is so amazing, that a clock will run faster or slower whether it's at the bottom of a building, pardon me, or the top of a building, or the bottom of a mountain, or down here, or up on a satellite.
And that's led to science fiction stories about people going out into space and coming back years later, younger than all the people they left behind.
Yes, I actually wrote a little kid story about that, where a boy goes to the edge of a black hole, and he comes back, and it's 10,000 years into the future, and Interstellar. The film that generated a lot of interest recently, that also had this feature of people going near a black hole and time running slowly.
We live in an age when all manner of scientific knowledge, from the safety of fluoride to the reality of climate change, faces opposition. Why is it important for citizens to be scientifically literate? Are you frustrated at all when you read some of the things that or hear some of the things that come out of Congress?
Yeah, hugely so. I mean, there's so many vital decisions that need to be made, which at their core are fundamentally scientific. And if you have a general public that somehow doesn't engage with science, that means they're not engaging with the ideas. Now, the way at the World Science Festival, for instance, that we try to deal with this is by presenting science in a different way than in the classroom, which has turned so many people off. So one of the programs that we're doing called Light Falls, it's about Einstein's general relativity, but it's not done in a didactic way. It's rather in a manner that weaves in the history, the story, the dramatic attempt to come up with a new understanding of gravity in a way that we hope touches people.
It's a show.
You're combining live action with animation?
That's right. So it's got theatrical elements. It's got wonderful visuals, animation that all allows a person to immerse themselves in the wondrous drama of discovery. And I think that's what we miss in the classroom, and that's why so many people are turned off by science.
Well, now we've got listeners excited, but as I understand it, tonight's performance is sold out.
Yes, that is true.
Will there be another performance?
We'll sign up on the waiting list. There'll be other performances. But yes, that's exciting for us, too, that there are so many people that want to experience science in a different way.
Alan, what kind of work do you encourage at the Center for Communicating Science?
Well, we work exactly on what you're talking about how scientists can become more communicative so that those of us in the public who aren't trained in science, those of us who are policymakers who have to fund science and yet don't quite speak the lingo, that we can understand it, that it's clear and vivid to us. In the same way the programs
are. So you get them to not use jargon?
Oh, not use jargon, but even before they don't use jargon, we get them to actually relate to the people they're talking with so that there's a real connection with the audience. And I was telling Brian a few minutes ago, it just thrills me to see the progress we've been making with scientists, getting them so vivid, so personal, that you can't take your eyes off them. And that's not exactly what we're used to hearing in a classroom that's didactic.
Yeah, totally. I mean, when science becomes a story as opposed to a body of facts that are in a textbook, it comes alive.
Well,
that changes.
As you mentioned with the GPS story.
Yes. Yeah.
It's also, applies to the Hubble Space Telescope, doesn't it?
Yes.
Which provides, if we needed it, evidence to the proof of the theory of relativity.
Yeah, the Hubble Space Telescope has done so much for our understanding of fundamental physics, confirming ideas of Einstein's through detailed observations of distant astronomical bodies. It perhaps is one of the most important scientific tools of the last 100 years.
Well, I think I have a general sense of what Einstein was saying, and I'm amazed that even when he thought he made a mistake, it often turned out that he hadn't. He had a pretty good track record. But the one that's hard for me is quantum mechanics. Mm. It's just so contradictory. And then there's that whole matter of why it's been so difficult for relativity and quantum mechanics to coexist.
Yes, these are very big questions. Einstein himself had difficulty accepting quantum mechanics. His general theory of relativity is based on a different collection of ideas, ideas that are very certain, ideas that are very stable, whereas quantum mechanics has this sense of uncertainty from Heisenberg. Now, when you study quantum mechanics in detail, you realize that it is a fantastically precise, fantastically stable theory as well, but the ideas are foreign to us.
Well, very foreign.
Both of them have been proven to be scientifically true, why have string theorists like you been unable to find a way to reconcile them to the satisfaction of everyone in the scientific community?
Well, hey, we're trying. Give us some points for that.
You've appeared on The Big Bang Theory, the TV show, and Shelton's just recently decided to abandon string theory.
Yes, that I've heard. Well, look, one of the biggest puzzles in theoretical physics is the one that you're talking about, putting general relativity, the laws of the big stuff, together with quantum mechanics, the laws of the small stuff, and it is a tough problem. It is amazing to me that we have on the table a theory that might be the answer, the fact that we have string theory on the table, but we are far from proving it, and it'll be perhaps generations down the line before we have the full answer.
Well,
and
I've had a number of string theorists as guests on the show, and they all seem to have a different number of dimensions that it works with.
No, that's settled down. It's 11 dimensions.
Oh, it is,
yes,
for sure?
10 of space and 1 of time.
You were going to say something, Alan?
I don't remember what it was.
Well, I'll ask a different question then. What about the flame challenge? Oh, first of all, I should tell people my guests are Brian Greene and Alan Alden. We're talking about the 2015 World Science Festival, which runs from today through this Sunday. 50 events at numerous locations all across New York City. And if you check out our show page, you can find a listing or and also connections. So tell us about the flame challenge.
The flame challenge is a worldwide contest that I started about 4 years ago. And we ask scientists to explain something complex so that 11-year-olds can understand it.
And it has to be 11-year-olds.
Yeah, well, 11, 12, but it's mostly the kids in that grade signed up by their teachers. And the kids are the judges of the contest. The entries are vetted for accuracy, and then they're sent to the kids. And the kids are just brilliant at judging these things. They're very careful. They want it to be serious. They want it to be full of information. One kid said, you know, it's okay to be funny, but you don't have to be silly. He said, don't forget, we're 11. We're not 7.
This year's question is about sleep.
Yeah, what is sleep? The kids came up with that question, and the scientists have answered it, and the kids have voted, and we're going to announce the winners this Sunday at the World Science Festival. And it's the same day as this wonderful outdoor fair.
The Science Street Fair, which is this science extravaganza that takes over Washington Square Park on Sunday. And that really is for kids, families, adults, where you can do all sorts of experiments, see various stage shows, and then there are these in-theater programs as well, such as Alan's
We'll be inside.
And you're going to have a sleep lab.
We're going to have somebody who's actually asleep backstage. And we're
nobody in the audience will be asleep.
No. We're going to make sure that
most of my listeners are asleep.
This person will have a EEG cap on his head, and we'll be watching his brain waves. And everybody will be able to see what stage of sleep he's in.
Now, some of the events require tickets, but many of them are free.
That's right. So we have a wonderful free event at Brooklyn Bridge Park Saturday night, which is all about stargazing. A bunch of astronomers will be out there talking to the public about what you can see. The street
which you can't see very much in the city.
You know, you'd be surprised. You can actually see quite a lot if you know where to look. And
Mainly up.
Yeah, that's a good direction. The street fair on Sunday as well. We also have some real cool events. Tonight we have a great event on how to build a better brain through electrical stimulation of the brain. This is at Skirball Center. That's tonight. And we have other programs that are focusing upon the nature of cosmology, the nature of time. So you can just go to the website and have a wonderful science extravaganza throughout the city.
Tell me a little bit about the electrical stimulation.
I wish I knew. You got to go to the program tonight.
Well, but I'm going to be watching you tonight. That's the trouble with the World Science Festival. There are about so many things that you want to see all of them, and you can only choose.
Well, you mentioned the stargazing.
Yes.
Will telescopes be provided?
Yes, there will be telescopes
Saturday
provided.
Night?
Yes, absolutely. And people are encouraged to bring their own, and each year many people do, but there will be telescopes there. If you don't have your own, so come on out and take a look at the stars.
And of course, that would be a lot better out in the country, wouldn't it?
It would be better out in the country. In fact, we're thinking about doing a World Science Festival upstate in New York for part of that reason.
No kidding.
Is still in the planning stages, yes.
Well, one of the nice things is there's a terrific presence of many of these events on the web. So the ones that I miss, I'll be able to see by tuning in on the internet.
Yeah, most of them are filmed and will become available at some point on the website. So, yes, everything is
It's a wonderful website. You know, if you need a little booster shot of science, you can just look at these short, wonderful stories about things you never imagined about nature.
And you explain things, for example, how science is needed to create special effects in movies.
Yes. So many people are unaware of the role of science in things that we all enjoy but never think of as scientific, such as special effects, such as building roller coasters. And we have a wonderful program called Cool Jobs, which is, I believe it's Saturday or Sunday, you have to look at the website, where kids come and scientists tell them about their jobs, but these are scientists who, they're not just wearing the white coats in the laboratory, they are the people that build the roller coasters or undertake the science required for special effects. So kids get to see science, the way it plays out in so many careers that you wouldn't think are scientific.
This is the eighth year of the festival.
Yes.
And you mentioned thinking about doing one upstate. Are they in any other cities?
Yes. So we are just finished a wonderful arrangement that we're going to do a World Science Festival in Brisbane in Australia in March. So any listeners that don't get enough in New York, join us in Brisbane then. We're talking with Moscow about doing a festival there. We've already had a preliminary one
in Amsterdam.
But
Putin doesn't want all of the stars to be seen.
Yes, exactly.
Sorry, political jokes in the middle of this. Yeah. I shouldn't have made that joke. I'm particularly curious about the great fish count on Saturday.
Yes, that's where we're inviting the public to put on waders and go into New York's waterways and search for new fish life out there in our waters.
New fish life?
Yeah, that's the goal, to find the 222nd species. That's the goal.
So we have a complete schedule on our show page at WNYC.org. And again, how do people access it on their computers?
Yes, just worldsciencefestival.com, and right there, there's a place where you can see the listings, buy tickets, find out the free events, and join in.
And who has designed all the events? Are the two of you sitting around and coming up with these
ideas? No, there's a wonderful team that's led by Tracy Day, who is the head of the World Science Festival. And they've done a great job putting together a great assortment of events.
And again, if you missed what I said before, there's a complete schedule on our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to Brian Green, physicist, string theorist, professor at Columbia University, co-founder of the World Science Festival, Alan Alder, actor, director, founder of the Center for Communicating Science. Thank you both so much for being on our show today.
Pleasure. Thank you.